Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 499th episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I'm a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia.
I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family doctor and the director of practice support at the College of Family Physicians of Canada. I'm also an adjunct professor at the U of A. And today, just like our last podcast, we have Dr. Koronik, who is going to take us through her most recent tools, or one of her most recent tools for practice. Tina, over to you.
Okay, hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me, despite what's happened on previous podcasts. So today we're going to talk about...
Now you're people are going to go back and go, what the hell happened?
Right, see it, yeah.
It's like a cliffhanger in reverse. I love it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, find the podcast, the previous podcast in which Tina swore.
Yeah. You just have, swore a lot, I think, was what we would say.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, so what's the topic today?
Okay, so the catchy title is No Gain, No Pain, which is really, what is the effect of diet-induced weight loss on osteoarthritis-related knee pain? So this came up, this was actually one of the supplemental questions in the chronic pain guideline we're looking at. We had actually already identified all our supplemental questions. We were aiming for 10. And then right at the end, someone said, well, of course, we're going to talk about, weight loss and its effect on pain. And we said, oh, shoot, dude, somebody needs to look at that. So that was the genesis of this tool. What is the benefit of weight loss on OA-related knee pain?
Because it's clearly the one of the biggest concerns when it comes to being, certainly with morbidly obese people, is the potential issue of osteoarthritis. I mean, it's right up there with cardiovascular disease and so on, and maybe even higher than that because of the disability in theory that can be associated with it.
Yeah, and I think there's some really strong beliefs out there. This is another one that there's a lot of strong beliefs and not as much strong evidence.
Exactly.
That idea, and many, you may have seen, I remember this was published once, this idea that, for every pound of weight that you gain, it puts like 6 pounds or something on your knee.
Yeah, I've heard 4, but it's all made up anyway, but no.
Yeah, I might have just made
and
that
it's a,
six
but it's up. It's a physics thing as well. But and there is a small study that I think looked at it one time, but yeah. And it may well be true.
Yeah, and it, right, exactly. So, speaking of working in reverse, we decided to go back and say, okay, well, what is the evidence? Are there any trials that show primarily, now we wanted to focus on diet-induced weight loss, so not exercise, because we have evidence that exercise is beneficial for osteoarthritis. Lots of evidence, actually. So just wanted to see if you lose weight, not because you're exercising, but because you're trying to restrict your caloric intake, does that improve your pain levels? We found primarily two key systematic reviews, but not a ton of evidence overall. So the first one had 4 randomized controlled trials with a total of 676 patients. Average BMI was about 35. So here's the kicker. The mean induced weight loss in the intervention group, and so these were all sort of dietary caloric restriction type of trials, they lost on average about 8% in the intervention group versus 3% in the control group. And that correlated to about 8.5 kilos versus 2.7 kilos, so a difference of 5% of your body weight. And what they reported is that there was a statistically significant improvement in pain scales, and the effect size was reported as 0.33. If you work backwards and correlate that with a pain scale, it's equivalent to about 5 points on a pain scale. So this is another one of those
on a 100-point scale.
Yeah, yeah,
out of 10-point scale.
Yeah. a subtle clarification.
Small clarification, a 5-point reduction on a 5-point pain scale.
Yeah.
It's a miracle. It's the opposite of a miracle because it's probably not clinically significant, right? So usually you'd like to see at least 10 to 11 points on a 100-point scale, but this was only 5. And the improvement, if you look at different trials, ranged anywhere from 2 out of 100 to 9 out of 100. And the minimal clinical important difference is probably at least a 10. Yeah.
And you probably, and you know, they didn't give you, you know, individual changes in individual patients, but, you know, and we've seen this before with many things, you probably see maybe, and I'm totally making up this number, but it's informed, probably, you know, 10%, 15% of people would have gotten to a clinically important difference.
You're talking about who gets the responder analysis.
Yeah, exactly.
Who gets to a point where they get clinically meaningful change? And you're not wrong there. This would not be too dissimilar from the cannabinoid type data.
Yeah.
I would guess it would be less than 10%. You'd guess around 10. So it's, you know, it's six of one, half dozen the other. But the average of five is often not clinically different from, in this case, control, because you don't really have a placebo in a diet study. It's unclear exactly how many would attain a clinically meaningful difference, but the average, as Tina pointed out, the average person doesn't get to a clinically meaningful difference.
Yeah, right. So the second systematic review, similarly, diet-induced weight loss versus a control with BMI, similar as well, about 34. And in this particular review, they did not find a statistically significant difference in pain scales between the two groups. So that was five randomized controlled trials, just over 600 patients. So they found no difference in pain scales. They did find if you did diet-induced weight loss plus exercise, there was an improvement in pain scales over control. so again, you know, if there is a little bit of a difference, it's not clinically meaningful. The problem that we sort of discussed in our group is that these studies are sort of limited by the magnitude of weight loss you see, because at most it's maybe a 5% weight loss over control.
But even that, I mean, that relatively is that's a pretty good weight loss difference if you're looking at almost any diets. So it's not, that's not, you know, you're right, it's not a huge weight loss relatively, but that's what you typically see with most diets.
Oh, not even that.
I'm being very generous.
Yeah.
So I think the last diet we looked at with fasting, or it was either fasting.
Maybe intermittent fasting.
Yeah, the intermittent fasting, or the other trendy one right now is the ketogenic. And it was only around a kilogram difference between the two after 6 months. So it's not, you know, this is reasonable for a diet study, like this kind of difference. You know, it's not enough likely to show a big difference in pain, but it's not a failure necessarily of the diet, because the diet got 5 kilograms or so, which
some of the stuff that you're talking about though, Mike, I think they were sometimes comparative trials as well. You know, they were comparing one diet to another. Whereas this was compared to a control, but you know, so it's, but you know, it's still a difference of, you know, whatever the average was, about 8 kilograms, 9 kilograms, which is, you know, most people would say that's a successful weight loss, I think.
Yeah, yeah. When they got 8 or 9 kilograms, the difference between them,
it was five. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. So that would be that would have been a success story in most diets.
Sure.
So you know, when you discuss that amongst yourselves, it does put it into perspective that really you could, because these diets are they're actually losing reasonable amount of weight compared to other dietary trials. So diet alone is not going to improve your OA pain.
Well, you know, it will in a small number of patients, but it's not to the degree where you can just go, well, no wonder you've got this. If you just lose some weight, it'll go away. That's not, you know, it's not as black and white as that at all.
Tina, the dream study here would be taking a bunch of OA patients, giving them some kind of gastric surgery where they lost dramatic amounts of weight, so that you could really see the effect of weight loss. Because I wouldn't expect you'd get a change in pain just from a gastric surgery in and of itself without the weight loss. So you can assume that the weight loss is the contributor. But like without that, because that's the kind of weight loss we're going to need to be really comfortable to say no. Right now you can say not that weight loss per se doesn't work, but that dieting for weight loss likely doesn't work for OA pain for most patients.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. And we actually looked. We looked for RCTs of bariatric surgery if they had outcomes of OA pain, and we did not find any. Actually, during PIPE, I was thinking someone was presenting on semaglutide. That'd be another interesting one, just long term, right?
Because of the amount of weight loss.
Yeah, just because you're seeing significant weight loss with, and not that I'm, you know, whatever, saying everyone should use that, but I'm just saying that would be interesting to further really understand this question.
Because we do know, I mean, there are cohort studies, right, that show that there's an association.
Yeah, for sure. So there's some observational data that in patients say they've had a surgically induced weight loss of 15% to 35%. In those trials, up to 75% of people said, yeah, I have some benefit. Now, they didn't always quantify what that benefit was. And again, there could be a lot of confounders. You've just had a surgery. You've just lost a lot of weight. Are you exercising a lot more? Are you getting, you know, physiotherapy support? Is your diet better? Like all these other confounders. But yeah, it does suggest that they report they're in less pain after that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And there are meta-analyses that look at, you know, an association just between BMI and developing osteoarthritis.
Yeah. Right. So there's many, many cohort studies that suggest that patients who have higher BMIs, like for instance, 30 or higher, were twice as likely to develop knee OA. So the suggestion that if you're going to gain weight, you're at higher risk of developing it. Still, the question of does taking away that weight improve the pain is the piece we're still looking at. And then there's other sort of evidence that looks at this in a different way. So there was a randomized controlled trial in patients who had a mean BMI of 35. And what they were, it was a diabetic trial, but they were randomized to intensive diet and exercise versus sort of a control. And those who were randomized to the intensive diet and exercise prevented the development of knee pain. So this idea, can you prevent it by not, you know, by losing a bit of weight, being more active, perhaps? Yeah, so it's interesting. So even so, some guidelines recommend education and exercise with or without dietary management for knee OA. And actually, so we cited one here. Some of the guidelines say there's insufficient evidence for dietary management alone. There are a couple other guidelines that do say you should lose weight, but they don't cite evidence to back it up.
Yeah. And I remember looking at some of the cohort data with this, and you said sort of it's a doubling of the risk between 2 and 3 fold increase. And I went and sort of teased out some of the numbers, and the numbers were ballpark. This is the 10-year risk of osteoarthritis, and I'm just using categories of BMI. If your BMI was less than 25, your chance of developing knee osteoarthritis, for instance, was about 4%. And then if you were between 25 and 30, it was 8%. And then when you get to the 30 to 35, you're talking about 15% of people will develop, you know, osteoarthritis over that 10-year period. So it's a fairly consistent increase. But when you're talking about doubling, you're talking going from, you know, 8 to 16 or something like that. And again, not everybody gets osteoarthritis, even in people who have a BMI greater than 35.
Yeah. Look at James trying to use the numbers. Rules of causation.
I know. To
support the use of cohort observational studies. I like it, James.
I'm trying to paint a picture.
I know you are. It's awesome. I just love EBM nerd, which normally you don't ever express.
I just belief and opinion. Me.
it's in your gut.
I have a gut feeling that it. You know, if it's weigh 500 pounds, it's going to cause some knee problems.
It's going to cause problems. I mean, yeah, it does boil down to that to a certain extent. I think that's a lot of what, when Tina brought this up, that a member of her committee was raising this issue. I think it's cognitively, you think about it, you're big, you're carrying a lot more weight. It's just more pressure on your knees. We can all imagine the times we've had to wear big backpacks hiking or whatever. Yeah. And if we do that all of our life, what that would do. So you can rationalize it, but it's exactly as Tina says, and you can support all this other evidence, but does it actually change once it's there? Does it change it to get rid of the weight? Yeah. And
here's the spin on it. But as soon as you lose weight, you got a greater risk of osteoporosis.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah. Either way. Yeah. So.
And I don't think, for things that, like, if you take a person who is literally, 300-400 pounds and they lose 200 pounds, there's no, I don't think you need a study to say, does that improve things like mobility and all that sort of stuff?
Does it make you feel better? Right. Yeah. I think that's a slam dunk. If you look at the semaglutide studies, I think those were, and I'm sure the quality of life stuff from the gastric surgery was also, I can't recall what it is, but the quality of life for semaglutide, again, it was one of those ones where, okay, it's now approaching on average to be a clinically meaningful improvement. Exactly. for the average patient. And to get that from an intervention is unusual. So yeah, there is, I think that the feeling good, and there's other research around this too, that large weight loss can improve other things in life, like this, just the quality of life and the feel and how people feel about themselves, all sorts of things. So it's not just for the osteoarthritic knee pain that the patient could consider weight loss. But I think one thing that we should say, which we haven't, is that we don't necessarily know, again, if weight loss is going to be healthy. Like when we talk about diets, for example, James, we've talked about this before, mm-hmm. that really it's the Mediterranean diet as far as for cardiovascular disease and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But in those studies, they didn't lose weight.
No, or literally change any surrogate markers.
Yeah, yeah.
It depends that if you follow them a little bit longer, they change a little bit, but not enough where you'd go, who cares? Or even that you could measure it. So it's an interesting one. And I think it's important that, if you go to the magazines, there's a bazillion diets for things that'll improve arthritis, things that'll improve your prostate, things that'll improve your hearing in your left ear. I mean, it never ends, right? And we know most of it is BS. But I think one of the key messages at the end of this tool for practice, Tina, was that there is no one size that fits all diet. The weight loss, is you need to be on a diet that they can adhere to.
Yeah. So, and I would just say all this discussion of diets, I think when other things are committee kind of like in the peer review we've gotten back from the guideline is as people like that separation of physical activity and diet, like, because we talk about diet a lot, but we know it's very, very hard to get patients to lose weight. And even in the best trials, right. So, but there is one thing that's achievable, and that's doing a bit of physical activity. So not tying them together all the time is maybe a nice way of approaching it, and that physical activity alone is a treatment for OA. We don't care if you lose weight or not. And then the second piece is, you're right, weight loss likely, we suspect, has benefits for other reasons. But if you can't do it and you just do physical activity, you can still, potentially see improvements in your OA pain. Yeah. So you're almost setting patients up for success a bit more by not attaching those two as they have to be together all the time.
Yeah. And I think that there's a good quote, and I mentioned this before in talks that I've given, and I like I said, I wish I would have made this quote myself, but the best weight is the weight you are when living the healthiest life you can enjoy.
Yeah.
I think that's the context that we're talking about. So, So it's a really tricky one, but it's really interesting that the relative limited evidence. I mean, it's certainly, I think you could agree, it's going in the right direction as always. It's not going to make your osteoarthritis worse.
No.
But, whether or not, I'm sure you've heard that, eating potatoes, I can never remember, I think potatoes are they supposed to cause arthritis or joint pain? I can't remember, one of the two. And I guess it depends whether you eat them or rub them on your knee or something. I don't know.
Well, there's a lot. Well, that's a whole other thing. Foods and their inflammatory effects on your arthritis.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
That's your.
That's the next tools for practice you're going to write. And then at the end, you'll likely kill yourself because it will be such a horrible experience.
Yeah. The inflammatory properties of food. Yeah. Tina, I didn't think I'd hear that from you, but awesome.
Well, I'm saying it in a bit of a facetious way but that was the request even for our guideline to review. Because there's a very strong market out there for that.
Oh, right? Yeah.
I know. James and I were talking about a recent podcast about this too, that there is an association of food and magical properties, what it can do. What it does. so little other than add calories and the occasional nutrient.
Yeah.
Oh, and most importantly, happiness.
Exactly. Happy.
You can't measure that right there.
You can't, Tina. Yeah. You can't. Yeah. You just never have.
Yeah. But money can't buy you happiness, but a good chocolate cream pie, whoa.
Yeah.
Or a nice cheesecake. Or occasionally poutine.
James just could go, we're going to start a second podcast.
Yeah, we're going to stop now because I want to go eat something.
List all the food that makes him happy.
Yeah, yeah. So anything else that you guys want to talk about?
The bottom line is that there is observational data that suggests obesity may be a risk factor for OA. However, trials reporting losing weight through diet alone, maybe like a 5% weight loss, demonstrated limited, likely clinically insignificant improvements in pain for, like we talked about that, 5 points on a 100-point scale. Limitation is that studies are limited by the magnitude of weight loss. And I like that we clarified that's not that they weren't good diet studies. It's just that diet alone is likely rarely going to result in the substantial types of weight loss. Some people would think you might begin to see benefits with arthritis, and I guess.
Yeah. So, on that depressing note.
Yeah. Go find some poutine.
Yeah. So, if there's nothing else, I think we'll just leave it at that. So, thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.